Hello, creeps. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And thanks for listening to 8-Bit Geek.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of the 8-Bit Geek. We're celebrating the last week of 8-Bit Horror Fest. We have a special guest who's here to review with us. It's none other than Peter Kleins, famous author of Paradox Bound. Go get it. It's on shelves today. Hi, Peter.
Hey.
How's it going?
Very good. How are you guys? Often?
Let's act like we haven't talked for the last 30 minutes off of mic.
Yeah, no joke. Hey, what's new?
Hello, gentlemen. I have never spoken to before.
Hello, fellow students.
Someone just made that joke the other day. Was it you, Kev? I think it was Caleb.
It could have been Caleb.
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Never gets old. That's cool. How's everything been, Peter?
Good. Very good. You know, celebrating Halloween. I just got back last night. Two of my friends actually got married on Halloween, so every year they throw a big anniversary Halloween party.
Nice. So
I was down in San Diego for that and drank a lot. And now we're back to talk about Halloween, the movie.
The movie that started the Halloween craze.
Yeah, Halloween did not exist before this movie.
Exactly.
Don't let the pagans know.
Honestly, this movie, I not that we talked about this before, but I was thinking about this before. And seriously, if you think about it, Halloween basically started modern horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
Really. Like, no questions asked. Every horror movie that has come out in the past 30 years is a descendant one way or another of Halloween. Mm-hmm. Or a bastard stepchild or something.
Especially like slasher films. I mean, like this one like set the bar and basically kept the bar that high because a couple of them couldn't meet it.
you know what's funny? I was when we first talked about doing this and I started thinking about it, let me toss this out as an early point and we can debate this maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't think Halloween is a slasher movie.
No.
No, I think slasher movies came out of Halloween. Mm-hmm. Like in the same way, you know, when Titanic came out and tons of studio executives said, wow, people really love shipwreck movies. I think people looked at Halloween and said, wow, what kids really love is seeing nude teenagers getting stabbed with knives. Mm-hmm. Let's do a movie about a summer camp. Let's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. I think slasher movies are literally an entire genre that grew out of people not understanding why Halloween is great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just my thought.
It's been a very long time since I've seen this film. And, mm-hmm. when I rewatched it, I kind of shared the same thought process, except I was like, this is a stalker film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's no, it's like slasher film. No.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me almost in that way of like Psycho, where it's kind of like even though I guess it's a little more slasher-ish, but even that movie, like the chick dies at the beginning, but it's kind of a bit before, if I remember correctly, that the other like before his next like kill or whatever, his attack and stuff. Yeah. But it's just, it kind of reminds me of the same thing where it's like, well, this is just about a crazy person just kind of stalking people. Mm-hmm. And like not necessarily like in Friday the 13th, which we watched, you know, earlier this month, where it was like just that mom just killing everybody. Yeah. And even though a lot of people do die in this, it was different. Like that was like, like I'm going to kill you just for the sake of killing you. Whereas I don't know, this was looking at me in the shadows, hiding behind the clothesline.
Yeah. I just watched this. I mean, honestly, I literally just finished watching this like an hour ago. And one of the things that struck me rewatching it, you know, trying to think ahead for this is that when you watch Halloween, there's no blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all strangles and stuff like that, yeah.
Well, even like when people get stabbed, like, okay, right in the beginning when 6-year-old Michael stabs his sister, mm-hmm. we don't see anything. It's very, very psycho-esque, like you were just saying. that we're seeing like the knife go up and down, and we're hearing the girl scream and going back and forth.
Well, you do like see her. I was gonna say, to add to that, you do see her hit the ground, and she is clearly, when they're looking at the knife being stabbed, that is when the actress is smothering blood all over her to make it look like she's bleeding. But it's for like a hot second. But even then, when he's outside, there's like the just minute amount of blood on the knife, just a little bit of blood on him.
Right.
When you think of a slasher movie, that you think like there'd be like blood geysering everywhere,
buckets of blood,
spraying the walls and everything.
Well, and like Nightmare on Elm Street last week, where where Johnny Depp gets pulled in the bed, and you're like, that's more blood than that's one in a human body. That's too much blood.
Like 10 human bodies. But yeah, you could think of that. You think of when Michael pins the guy to the wall with the knife, lifts him up and pins him like 3 feet above the floor or whatever. Mm-hmm. No blood. We don't get like the, you know, gallons dripping down onto the floor or anything. It's just he's clearly dead. There's no question of that. It's not like they're sort of leaving it up for interpretation. But yeah, it is, as opposed to slasher films, all the blood, the gore is very minimal in this.
That's true.
So.
Also, I'd like to point out during that scene where he pins him against the door and just stands there looking. I took a measurement. I took a ruler out. And there's no possible way that knife could do that. Just saying.
Not remotely at all.
Thanks, Mythbusters.
The very tip of that knife would be into the wood of the wall or the cabinets behind him.
Aren't real?
What? And then you got to estimate that guy weighs at least 170 pounds. I put that in there. Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the knife doesn't even
ruins it all.
The knife doesn't even start like kind of bending down. At least he should have fell. It's whatever. You know, it's whatever.
I guess we're done. The movie's clearly garbage. It's
literally unwatchable.
Worst movie ever.
What I forgot about this film is that Michael Myers drives a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Because I
was thinking about that too. It was like, man, this is one of the first movies I feel like we've watched with like, you know, one of these sort of killers where it's just like, yeah, no, you a normal dude. you gotta get around. You can't just stalk people in the woods, huh?
Yeah. You gotta jump in your 1980s or 70s station wagon.
I'm just gonna drive around for a bit.
I only bring it up because, like, in my memory, and I think probably in most people's memory, it's always like he's just there and he just shows up and he's always just watching you. And, like, I don't know. I've always associated that with Michael Myers and, like, I completely forgot. So when I saw him like following and everything, I was like, huh. So dude's just gonna, he's just gonna drive.
Well, like, the bit when he's driving down the street and Jamie Lee Curtis and her friends start yelling at him and he squeals on the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. He just kind of he tested him.
So, Peter, what did this
thing about, they make note about that at the beginning of the movie though. Loomis is like, because they talk about him getting away, and then the next day when they're at the hospital and the hospital director is trying to point the blame.
He doesn't know how to drive.
Yeah, and he's like, somebody must have taught him.
So I will start things here with I'll ask Peter and then we'll go around. Just give your overall thoughts on the film and kind of going back to it. I don't know how long it's been since you've watched it.
Well, like I said, I actually just watched it.
Well, before.
Yeah, but before today.
Before today.
Halloween is one of those movies that, like, I don't know about you guys, but probably I have seen Halloween at least, okay, we're closing in on 40 years, because we know they just had the big Jamie Lee Curtis announcement, but I have probably seen Halloween at least 20 times, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the thing that it became, like, I have been to Halloween parties where it's just playing in the background, you know, and all that. So yeah, this was, in all fairness, today was the first day I'd really sat down and like sort of studied the movie and really sort of observed like, okay, what are they doing here for clever, you know, this neat shot, that neat. And it really is amazing because it is a movie where John Carpenter sat down and he broke so many, not just horror tropes, but also filmmaking tropes. of how you shoot shots, how you do these scenes. But then on top of it, that he's breaking filmmaking tropes and horror movie tropes of why do we do this, why do we do that. One thing, like I told you guys earlier, I thought of some stuff to try and make me look smart when we talked about this.
You don't have to do that here. You're already the smartest one in the room.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
I think all of us know that's not true, but but thank you. One thing that I don't think has ever really been talked about is the fact of Michael Myers wearing a mask in this, both as a sort of in-universe thing and a filmmaking trope thing, that he's wearing a mask, but we know who it is.
Yeah.
Like, as the audience, it's not like the, oh my gosh, who could the killer be? Who could this mysterious mask
man
be?
That's true.
Yeah. We know from the very beginning it's fucking Michael Myers. He got out of broke out of prison. He's, you know, the other people don't know. Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't know who it is and everything. But like Loomis is there every minute. Donald Pleasant sitting around. Oh my God, it's Michael Myers. He's gotten loose. He's here. So right off, we're sort of breaking horror tropes in general that we have a masked character that we know who it is. Like there's no question who this guy in the mask is, and also, he's not wearing the mask for any of like the usual reasons. You think Phantom of the Opera, you think dozens of 60s horror movies. Oh, I'm scarred and disfigured and I wear this mask to hide my horrible face, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, I remember my girlfriend in college going like, you know, like the scene at the end when he pulls the mask off and we kind of get a look at his face. My girlfriend in college, like, I do Michael Myers. He's hot.
Do you think it's just deep rooted in his psyche because he had the mask on when he killed his sister?
I think there's a little bit of that. Okay. I also think there is. I know that like in the script for Halloween, they just refer to it as the shape.
Yeah.
And I think it is an idea that Carpenter had that Michael Myers is actually removing his identity by putting the mask on. Normally, if you think about it, you put on a mask to hide your identity, to do anything, but this is almost like it's almost a Rorschach thing of this is my real face, you know, as opposed to, oh, look, I'm this guy, you know.
I was reading some stuff about the why they called him the shape and stuff. Apparently,
yes.
I guess at one point he mentioned that he went with that because in the Crucible, that's the term that they use repeatedly to talk about evil spirits. They're calling them
really?
The shapes.
I did not know.
Apparently, like, that's one thing that Carpenter pulled from it as far as like why they called him that. But also with the mask, they said that like they had a couple of different mask costumes, because this movie also, we should note, was made for $300,000.
This is like a cheap movie,
right? So their costume,
Dirt cheap
movie. Their costuming budget was really cheap. Jamie Lee Curtis went to like TJ Maxx and spent like $100 on her costume, and like that was it.
She's wearing her own clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the costume department for him had come up with just a couple of really cheap costumes, and of course it's pretty famously known now, anyways, that like the mask he's wearing is a Captain Kirk mask with the sideburns and eyebrows pulled off, painted white with the hair like spray painted brown and then like all tufted out. But like they had a clown costume.
Really?
Because he wore a clown costume when he was a kid. They had one that was meant for like to symbolize like he's doing it again. But the screen test or the audience that was screen tested or whatever said that the white face mask was creepier because there was zero emotion on the face. That it was just this blank white face just doing this stuff. Whereas like the clown showed too much, even though it was creepy with that whole him being a kid, like just the emotionless face was way creepier.
The clown mask would have like a smile on it or something like that, so it seemed like he's getting joy from it. Yeah, I could see that.
So I don't know. Totally. There's some interesting stuff about the whole shape and the reason why they went with the costume and stuff. Like, I mean,
But that's it. I think there's a lot of stuff like that people just don't really consider. They look at this movie and think of it, oh, it's the dawn of horror and all. And it's like, no, there's like some interesting stuff behind this for that. This, you know, what is this guy? I think it's really it's almost sad in a way that everyone just, so many people think of this as like the first slasher movie. Mm-hmm. And really this is such an in-depth, honest horror movie of like we're saying, all the psychological stuff about the blank face, about the fact mm-hmm. that, you know, why is he choosing to wear this mask that isn't, you know, making everyone think, my God, who could the killer be? It could mm-hmm. be any of us. It's, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's brilliant in many ways like that. So,
Kev, what did you feel?
I mean, I feel the same. The thing we want to talk about, like stuff that's iconic for this too. I really like the opening shot. It seemed like it was all done in one take, which is very interesting, especially seeing from the kid's point of view. But, you know, kind of following from outside the house, you know, looking through the windows,
yeah,
seeing
really cool.
his sister and the boyfriend make out, and then they go upstairs immediately. And the fact that he comes in through the kitchen door and, like, you know, the grabbing of the knife. It's like, I wonder what it was like in the 70s, because, you know, like, cameras were huge back then, like, in size. How the hell were they able to, like, did they mount it to the kid, or, like, was the, like, cameraman standing over the kid?
It was kind of three different takes. There's three takes in that, or three different cuts in that shot, or two maybe. It's three different shots with two cuts. Yeah, but I mean, the way with those,
it was very convincing though.
No, it was really when he puts the mask on and when he pulls the mask off are the two cuts.
Yeah. Okay. And the mask, yeah, putting the mask on over the camera was really cool too, and I liked that. And it gave you like it just gave you the stalker feel, especially the whole breathing under the mask, and mm-hmm. just. And especially how calm he was when he was breathing.
When you don't know it's a kid until the mask is pulled off at the very end, and they're like, Michael? And then you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up until then, it could have been like her 13, 14, 15-year-old brother who's mm-hmm. doing all this. And mm-hmm. no, it's a 6-year-old.
It's a 6-year-old. And was it the sister? I think they do say it was the sister later,
yeah, it was
right?
the sister, yeah.
Because at first when I was watching that, I was like, man, like right after he stabbed her, I was like, does he hate babysitters? Like, was that his babysitter that he murdered? And that's why he's going after Jamie Lee Curtis later? Like, fuck babysitters.
Yeah, it was his sister, Judith Myers.
Yeah.
Can I bring up totally, because you mentioned camera, I actually know somebody who worked on Halloween.
Oh, okay.
On this movie. Yeah. This guy I worked with as a director, Krishna Rao, his very first movie was Halloween, that he'd been a studio like PA working in the office and really wanted to work on films, really wanted to work, and they finally said, okay, you can work in the camera department on some horror movie we're putting out. And so he got the bottom rung camera department job on this John Carpenter movie they were making for no money, and he's actually screen credited on Halloween.
Nice.
And I worked with him a couple times on a show called The Chronicle. So
nice.
That's it was awesome. Very fun. He told me that and was like, you worked on the Halloween?
Yeah. We're talking about the same one, right? Not the, at least not part three, right?
That's it. Like, you're not saying like you worked on Halloween part 7 or something like that. Like, yeah. You worked on the Halloween.
You know, it's really interesting. Kevin, you mentioned part 3. I was looking at like IMDb and all like the ratings for the series, and like how like this one is obviously one of the highest rated ones, because, you know, we've been tracking kind of what the movies that we've been watching also. Mm-hmm. And this one was at a 78, and then it was like part 2 was like a 62, and then part 3 was like a 48. Mm-hmm. But then part 4 was back up to like a 65, and it was just like, man, part 3 must have sucked.
Well, okay, the reasoning between that before that, actually, Bill and Steve from Movie Films explained this to me. What it was originally, I guess, when Carpenter was making the Halloween movies, he wanted to do like a trilogy of horror type thing, but every story would be a completely different character. So Michael Myers would have only been in Halloween 1.
Yeah.
So
every year we'll just do a new Halloween movie that is about to be completely different.
And so Halloween 1 was such a success that they were like, oh, well, we need more of Michael Myers. So Halloween 2 will focus on Myers. After that, they were like, okay, cool, Halloween 3, I guess you could do what you want, which was originally supposed to be a movie called Trick or Treat or something like that, or no, Witching Season or something like that.
I think it is called Halloween, like, Witching Season, isn't it? And that's one of those, that's the title.
Season of the Witch. Thank you.
Season of the Witch.
See, every time I think Season of the Witch now, it's ruined by that Nicolas Cage movie that came out in the last 5 years. where it was like a Skyrim type movie with Nicolas Cage being exactly what Nicolas Cage is. Like everyone's speaking medieval accents. It's called Season of the Witch.
That was actually written by Guy Braggy-Schutt, who that script actually won a Nickel Fellowship. It's one of those things where it's a brilliant script that then it came out and they're like, oh, well, we've tweaked this and 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 this. And oh, now it's kind of crap.
It was like when the Street Fighter the movie came out and they had the all-American Jean-Claude Van Damme playing Guile.
Yeah. You know?
It was something like that where it just didn't make sense. Like,
made
just
complete sense, Kevin.
Complete sense. Yeah, when he's like, "Hello, I am American." It's like Tommy Wiseau trying to say he's all American.
Some skinny guy with green makeup and a red fright wig.
Yeah. Also, I got to sneak my room reference in this one, so it's a success. This is a good practice.
Doug, what'd you think about the film?
Well, to kind of echo what everyone said, it's been a while since I've watched this one. I would have to say last time I saw it was, I may have been like 15, maybe. So 15 years ago or more at this point. I'm going to feel bad saying this. This was a lot slower of a movie than I remember it being.
Oh, yeah.
And especially in comparison to some of the other movies that we've watched. And we've watched, I mean, we did like Origins this year, right? So mm-hmm. we watched, you mm-hmm. know, Night of the Living Dead, Friday the 13th. Fucking that stupid movie you wanted us to watch, Kev. And then
you mean that amazing movie called Phantasm?
Yeah, thank you. That movie.
Oh God.
They are not going to live that down,
that
Peter.
Terrible movie.
And Nightmare on Elm Street. And just even in comparison, I would say to like, I mean, Night of the Living Dead is slow. We can all admit. I mean, that movie, 1968, it was just a slow movie. Yeah, like this one was slow too. But like I said, I felt like I was watching almost like Psycho in that regard. Also, it was just that it was a different kind of slasher flick, without it necessarily being a slasher flick. Even though, like Pete said, this is kind of what's almost sparked like the rebirth of this sort of franchise again. Like, because of this, we have Friday the 13th, and we have Nightmare on Elm Street, and we have those other movies that all came out in the 80s. Because it's kind of like, probably kind of spearheaded that as well. I wonder when Evil Dead come out, because Evil Dead, I remember, came out before Nightmare on Elm Street, and we were like,
Evil Dead was the 80s. I'm pretty sure
Evil Dead was 81.
81. Yeah. It's just and I mentioned this last week also, is that, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street came out in like 84, which at that point felt late to the game because, you know, we already had, you know, Friday the 13th, like set in 1981,
three
I believe.
Sequels, yeah,
and like this, and Evil Dead came out in 81, and this one came out in 78. So it's just like 84, you know, that's like 6 years after Halloween came out, and at that point, but they all just seem so eternal. Like they all feel like, because they were all coming out at the same time with their sequels and whatnot. It's just they all feel like they've just been around forever. So this is another franchise where even though it came out in 78, it just feels like it's been around for so fucking long, which is 40 years. So
I think Nightmare on Elm Street did a neat thing, though, that for a lot of the early 80s, after, again, with the Hollywood takes the wrong lesson out of this, that, you know, we had our April Fool's Day, our Happy Birthday to You, all those slasher movies that came out through like the late 70s, early 80s after Halloween, because, you know, it's like, okay, so what kids want to see are boobs and people getting knifed. And that spawned the slasher franchise. But I think actually a neat thing is through all of those, none of those movies are supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
That Nightmare on Elm Street was the first one where it suddenly said, well, wait a minute, what if we did a slasher movie with a supernatural killer?
Well,
that it wasn't just some guy in a mask.
I don't know. This guy seems really pretty supernatural, seeing that he can get stabbed, shot, and you know, should be dead, and he just keeps getting back up.
You mean Michael Myers?
Yeah.
In this? That's actually, the thing is, though, like I said, I just watched this like an hour ago. It's mm-hmm. really interesting. He doesn't, though. That the wounds Michael Myers gets are definitely like, you know, if it happened to you, me, whatever, we'd be like, oh, Jesus, God, somebody stabbed me in the eye with a coat hanger, somebody shoved a knife in my side or whatever. but none of them are really fatal. The only like really questionable thing is at the end when Donald Pleasant shoots him
five times,
boom, 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 and he falls out a window, and then he just vanishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but other than that, like the wounds he gets through this are actually very believable,
very salvageable.
Yeah, exactly. That we would get that somebody could take this wound, and if you were just really friggin' crazy, you could keep going after this. As opposed to, you know, I think a lot of these movies, again, people taking the wrong thing out of this, it became the whole thing of, oh, serial killers can survive anything. What's that? You hit them in the face with a shotgun and they fell off a, you know, 900-foot cliff into the acid bath that was on fire, you know, and then they just come crawling out with a
Well, to be fair, the first Friday the 13th, it was the mom, and she did not get back up.
She did not, yes.
Although she did fight for like 45 minutes of that movie, which was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think there is a neat thing that I'm wondering, I don't have anything in front of me, but if somebody wanted to sit down and figure out a timeline, I'm willing to bet that if you looked at Nightmare on Elm Street, which, what did we say, was 84? 85?
Yeah.
84. Look at Nightmare on Elm Street, and then I bet right after that is when Halloween suddenly takes a supernatural turn. And, oh, Michael Myers is actually some druidic whatever who's coming back. And
was
suddenly,
that season of the Witch?
Maybe, yeah. And then Jason Voorhees suddenly becomes supernatural. That he's gone from being just the guy living out in the woods to the guy who was killed and comes back to life. You know? That I think, in the same way that Halloween basically created the slasher franchise, I think Nightmare on Elm Street, I don't know if I want to say rebooted it, but I think Nightmare on Elm Street created the idea of the literally unkillable.
That's fair, because Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, came out in 88.
I was just going to say that. I was looking that up. Yeah.
What is Final Cut? What is that one? It's 2001. Did they re-release that movie? What's Halloween 4 Final Cut?
That's the one where they made a partnership with Apple.
Unless they made the horse shit ending that, you know, like that they made the daughter the next killer. I don't know.
It says a lot of people as himself. Oh, it's a retrospective documentary in the making of Halloween 4. Never mind. But it's just like, what is this? Like, and, why did that come?
I mean, I think it was like how it was okay. Like Friday the 13th 5 is when like he gets Jason's corpse gets struck by lightning and comes back to life.
Yes.
And then in
Actually, that's 6. 5.
That's 6.
Yeah, 5, the killer was not Jason. It was somebody posing as Jason. It was like somebody who worked
like
at the hospital.
The orderly at the mental hospital.
Yes.
Was Jason.
So that was in 85. Yeah. So in 86 Jason lives.
And then in 8 is when Jason, like, we find out that we can kill Jason and his heart, his essence can actually infect other people.
9. That was 9. Jason.
9?
Yeah, 8 was the one where quote-unquote takes Manhattan.
Yes, and then Jason X is Jason in space.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah, God. Like one of the best ones.
Yep,
that
is, I love Jason
really.
X.
Me too. Oh my God.
Over Jason X.
Oh, you're going to fight me. Not, I'm with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not fighting anyone here, man. Jason X is one of my favorite ones. It's got one of the most creative kills, I mean, just in the whole series. Oh, man.
Everything about that movie is so fantastic. I love that they've actually got bloody hell, I just blanked on his name.
Kane Hodder?
No. Not Kane Hodder, the guy who plays Bronski, who is Peter Mensa.
Farscape or something? Or
Peter Mensa. He's been in everything. He was in The Hulk. Yeah. He was just in Midnight Texas. He was in 300.
Yeah.
You know, but that whole thing when he gets
Avatar.
Stabbed, it's like, oh, it'll take more than that to kill this old dog. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah, that was perfect. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to have to revisit that movie soon. It's so good. Yeah, and it's funny because that was one of those movies, and it gave into the trend of that time of doing stupid movies in space, like Leprechaun in space, you know, Jason in space. And
I have a theory on Jason X, and I think it kind of relates to what we're talking about here with Halloween, that in the same way that Halloween is not a slasher movie, mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons Jason X gets a lot of crap from people is that the entire Friday the 13th series is slasher movies, mm-hmm. but Jason X is a monster movie.
Mm. Yeah.
And in the subtle differences there, that a slasher movie is about the guy, and the point of a slasher movie is how much blood can we spray at the camera, mm-hmm. on the walls, all that. And a monster movie is much more about this unstoppable thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think of like Godzilla is a monster movie, King Kong is a monster movie, Frankenstein is a monster movie, and Jason X is much more a monster movie than a slasher movie. Mm-hmm. And because people kept looking at it as, oh, this is such a horrible slasher movie, Jason X sucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, yeah, it does if you're going to look through it in that lens, in the same mm-hmm. way that, like, wow, Silence of the Lambs is the worst romantic comedy that they've Orion ever put out, you know? But yeah. That's not the movie it is. And if you look at it through that lens, it's going to suck. But if you look at it for what it is, that Jason X is a monster movie, mm-hmm. then Jason X is kind of fun, actually.
It really is. It is a really fun movie. But this isn't Jason X. I guess we can get back to Halloween.
I know. I'm sorry. I
no, that was me for bringing it up, and I can talk Jason all day. We could do our own little podcast, you and me, Pete. We could do a multi-part just defending
next,
Jason
we're
X.
Talk...
That's next year's theme. It's just Jason movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to talk about a new Friday the 13th, and then...
Yeah. We're going to spend... We got a five-hour in-depth review... breaking down Jason X.
Well, okay, actually, let me put it this way, though. Talking about misinterpreting movies in the mm-hmm. sense that, like, okay, Halloween is not a slasher movie, it's a horror movie, but it spawned slasher movies because people didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I actually think that's why the Rob Zombie Halloween remake did not strike a good chord with people, mm-hmm. because his Halloween is a slasher movie.
That's true.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so right off the bat, it has a very, very, very different feel from the original because it's a totally different genre of movie.
Right.
So
I didn't even watch that one.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. I'll agree. Yeah. It's a different movie.
But it's a different movie.
Same,
yeah.
Yeah. With some of the same aspects, but like mm-hmm. it focuses a little bit more on him as a kid, but he's not six. It would have been way creepier if that kid had been six, but, you know, but it's Rob Zombie, so it kind of has that, like, kind of darker, twisted take on it, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not as much as, like, Devil's Rejects or something, but not far.
From the information they give in the original Halloween, Michael Myers is 60 now. They actually say in the first movie that he was, like, born in 57.
Oh, so, wow.
So yeah, Michael Myers, he's like a 60-year-old guy right now.
I would love for them to keep that... To keep that timeline going so we could see a 60-year-old Michael Myers in the new one.
Well, yeah. Well, the new one, I mean, they've said that the new movie with Jamie Lee Curtis is a direct sequel. I mean, they're going to pretend that the other sequels didn't happen. So, I mean,
a direct sequel to
the first? Well, they said the first one. It'd be a direct sequel to the original Halloween.
We're even going to say Halloween 2 didn't exist.
That's what it sounds like. John really? Carpenter confirms new Halloween will pretend the sequels never happened.
Well,
Jesus.
Interesting. I wonder if it's because like Halloween 2 was a direct sequel to Halloween 1.
But Jamie Lee Curtis was in that one or no?
Yeah, she was in in part 2. Yeah.
Then why wouldn't it be the direct sequel to that one?
Unless they are going to count that one. I mean, I can let's see. Let's go to Collider. Collider's got an article on it. What do they have to say?
Because they can't really, you know, include the other sequels, especially the one after H2O where Jamie Lee Curtis dies in it. Like at the very beginning, the Halloween Resurrection, the shitty one with Busta Rhymes.
That's the one that most people love. H2O. Yeah, it's beloved.
I've argued this on many occasions. The last Halloween movie to come out was Halloween Resurrection with Busta Rhymes, and over the series, Michael Myers has been shot, stabbed, blown up, you know, just every kind of way killed. But then all of a sudden he keeps coming back, and then all of a sudden Busta Rhymes busts out some shitty kickboxing on him, and he was gone for good. I was like, how does that work?
Hey, just an update. I'm reading the article fully and not just the headline. It would only use the 1978 original and Halloween 2 as its springboard.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I could live with that. H2O was okay. I had to slow myself on that one.
Hold on, continue. I need to keep reading the article.
I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I need to keep reading because it seems like maybe he went back on that recently, and that's why this article exists.
Someone's typing it as we're yeah. talking.
Look at this article. This came out today. I guess he said something else because originally that's what he said, but now it seems like, because it goes on, the movie will cut out even more than what we thought. A few weeks back, Carpenter, who's on board to produce and score the new epic, revealed that it will completely ignore each and every sequel, and now he has confirmed that once again. In a recent interview, the writer-director spoke in a bit about blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so, like,
that's what it says for the rest of the article.
Blah, 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 blah. So where do you, okay, so I get it. I get the reason why they would do that, but where do you take it from there? Like, obviously they want to reboot this thing, and so do they just, do we just forget all the other sequels then, and this is the new building block?
Honestly, they do that with the Godzilla movies. I mean, Godzilla movies have rebooted, like, three times now, and every time it's like, okay, so the 1950s movie is the only one that happened, and then we had all the, like, the 60s and 70s movies with Jet Jaguar and Megalon and all those. Mm-hmm. No, wait, they never happened. Godzilla started in, he showed up in the 50s, and then he didn't show up again until 1984. Mm-hmm. And then we had a bunch of movies, and we went, no, that didn't happen. And now it's the 1950s, and he showed up in 2000. And I guess we're just going to say the same thing, that just forget it.
No,
that it, she was, yeah.
They're making it sound like he went out the window and he's been gone for 60 or 40 years. Yeah. Or whatever. That's what it looks like. I mean, literally, they're saying that he's cutting that part out too because he wants to start with a blank canvas.
Huh.
So he's getting rid of part two because he doesn't necessarily want Lori to be his, like, secret sister or whatever. So
interesting.
Yeah. That changes some things.
That was a weird twist in the movies, mm-hmm. though. Let's be honest. That suddenly she's.
I did like how they worked it into the 2007 remake, however, mm-hmm. spoiler, Jared, is that, like, you learn that one because, like, he murders the whole family, so that little sister's got to go somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the weird thing about that, by the way. Her name, the little baby in the remake is named Judith, but in the original Halloween, that's the sister he kills, is Judith. Yeah.
Dun, so. Dun, dun.
It was also really weird. I noticed, as I remember thinking this watching the movie, is that there's an actress who played in this movie that was one of the friends, Amy, I think, and her last name is Loomis, which was
in real life,
which, and then there's the Dr. Loomis in the mm-hmm. movie.
You know,
I actually think I read an interview with her a while back, like the 30th anniversary or something, and she told this very funny story about how she went to see the movie at its premiere, like in Times Square or something like that, at a movie theater. And at one of the points when Michael Myers is the ghost, like he's put on the sheet and he has the glasses over his face, over that. And she sits up in bed and she's like, oh, do you see anything? And apparently the guy sitting right in front is like, woo, nice tits! And she's sitting right behind him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I just read about that on one of the, like, the things about the movie, because she'd gone with Dennis Quaid, I think, to the premiere, and Dennis Quaid was like, well, you want me to kick his ass? And she was like, no, it's all right. Like, just, she thought it was flattering, but yeah. Like, woo, boobies! Hey, there were some boobs in this movie, huh? Man.
Oh, the 70s. Wow.
Yeah. Correction on that. It wasn't Judith. It was Angel Myers that her name was in 2007. But they never make any mention of that in the original Halloween. Yeah, so they just kind of created her, it seems. So I guess Judith stays the same. But Angel Myers was the name that Laurie finds out. That's what her real name is in Halloween 2.
The Rob Zombie Halloween 2,
which I thought was really good because they really just, like, fucked Michael Myers up as far as, like, the way his mask was, like, mostly ripped up, and when he was, like, killing people, you could hear him, like, grunting and, like, as he's, like, stabbing people. I thought that was a really raw Michael Myers.
It was a slasher Michael Myers versus slasher, this, like, slasher. He's like a silent predator in this one, where he doesn't say a fucking word.
It's slasher bordering on torture porn.
Yeah, really. It really is.
But it is, though, seriously. And I don't mean to sound mean, but I don't really mean that as a compliment.
That's always been my complaint with Rob Zombie movies. That's why I don't really care for any of his movies. And, like, this one was kind of an exception because I felt like it was toned back in comparison to House of a Thousand Corpses and,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
That they're just at the point where it's like, I can't care about this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That in 10 minutes in, you've desensitized me so much to violence and caring about any of these people anything.
There's nothing else you could do to these people that I'm going to care about. Like, okay, just kill them.
Exactly, yeah. And not only that, but like so often, they're not people they'd care about anyway.
Well, that's the thing. They made his family, like, I guess they almost wanted you to like sympathize with him in a way, is because they made his family in the Rob Zombie just pieces of shit, all of them.
Yeah.
So well, when it was really like, just the dad or like the stepdad or whatever.
Yeah, and the mom was kind of Forsythe. Like, I mean, yeah, was, so you didn't care. You're almost rooting for him when he kills him.
Yeah.
You're like, yay! Yeah. Whereas in this movie, again, you see it's a 6-year-old, and you're like, fuck, mm-hmm. like yeah. holy, your own
and
sister.
Yeah, and it does. It is such a... It is... I hadn't really thought of that because, like, you know, going into it now watching, you know, it's a little kid all along, but it is just the shock of seeing how carefully and methodically he, like, goes and watches them and gets the knife and just stabs her again and again and again, and then you find out, holy crap, it's a 6-year-old kid doing this.
Yeah.
That it is a huge kick, and I think it's also...
Just unfazed too. He's just standing outside of the house. Walks up to his parents, holding the fucking knife. Like doesn't even like think about it.
Ugh. Yeah, and they're all here. Michael, what's wrong?
Scene lasted way too long though. Like if I were a parent and I saw my kid with a bloody knife, my first thought wouldn't just be standing there staring at him. It'd be like running to see what happened
inside. Yeah.
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 But again though, it's not like. The blood drenched knife. It's not like he comes out like sprayed in blood and everything. Mm-hmm. It's this kid who's almost staring like shell shocked, mm-hmm. almost. Yeah. You know, it's little Michael with PTSD at age 6,
yeah.
staring off into space, and you can almost buy that the parents would stand there for a minute, like trying to figure out what's going on, what's wrong. Wait a minute, what's that on the knife? Because it isn't a typical slasher movie knife where he's holding it up and the knife has like somehow a gallon of blood on it, even though you know that's like sprayed down his leg and there's a trail leading back into the house. It's
that's true.
Yeah.
All right. Let's begin to wrap this thing up. We'll go around the room, say something you like about it, something you didn't like about it, and then give it a score out of 5. And we will go ahead and start with our guest, Kevin.
Well, it was nice being on the show, guys. See you guys around. Can you cue the Hulk music, please?
We'll start with Peter.
All right, something I liked. Like I said before, I love how much this movie smashes existing horror tropes, or at least at the time existing horror tropes, that this character is wearing a mask for no reason whatsoever except to be disturbing, and that's it. I like that, you know, he's not random psychopathic killer. We can actually kind of see a pattern to what he's doing and why he's doing it. And I think that's amazing. Honestly, if I had to pick something I didn't like about it, prepare for heresy, it's Donald Pleasance. Donald Pleasance just sort of keeps showing up and not doing anything.
Yep.
Agreed. I totally agree.
At the very end that he's just sitting here like, oh my God, he's horrible. No, listen to me. You have to do this. Oh, you have to prepare. But he doesn't really do anything. And really... Okay, let's just stop and logically think about this. Everything happens in the old Myers house at the end of it. So you're the psychologist or psychiatrist, whichever he is, who spent all this time with a kid. You've come back to the hometown, and yet this isn't the first place you chose to go. Like,
I was gonna say he was there. He was there with the cop, and he was waiting. Like that was that scene with the kids that were like daring themselves to go into the house,
yes.
And then Donald Pleasance was on the side going, "Hey kids, don't do it," or something. It was hilarious. Yeah, He was like fucking trolling some 12-year-olds. And that's when the cop comes up and scares him. Yeah. So, I mean, he was there at some point, but then he like gave up because like he just went to go look around and he saw the car.
He wanders away on a, I don't know, protracted bathroom break or something. And then, and while he does, Michael Myers murders everyone in the movie. Like every death happens when he walks away.
Exactly.
So that would be my one I don't like it thing. But even with that, for being such a revolutionary movie, so many brilliant things it does with camera shots, with characters, everything, I would still have to give it 5 out of 5. I mean, even if I had to be violently conservatively hatred of it, it would be like a 4.9 out of 5. So awesome. That's my score for it.
Doug?
I think the thing that I didn't like about it is that there's parts of it that feel like I haven't aged well, and part of that is the pacing. I think that part of my personal issue with it is just having seen so many other like horror films, like even modern day ones, and some of the other ones we watched, even the pacing is very slow in this movie, and that was kind of hard to get through. Like as far as just like, okay, something needs to happen soon, anything, something. Mm-hmm. And then I agree with you. Dr. Loomis was almost an unnecessary character. Like they used him to for like exposition to tell you why he's here.
Yes.
Oh, I look.
Yes.
But like, and also he didn't seem very. Like it didn't seem like a doctor by any means. Like the things he's saying, like I guess it's a different type. But like I looked into the devil's eyes. Like maybe you shouldn't be a doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you're not coming at this from like
objectivity goes out the window.
I worked with him for 7 years, and I've spent the last 8 trying to keep him out of society or whatever. Like. Okay, I feel like you're very biased at this point.
You spent
8 more time working against him than with him. I had some issues with that. That being said, I still, you know, it's still a great movie, and again, he's an iconic character in our modern day. Like, you know, our Freddy and Mike Myers and Jason and all those are Dracula and Frankenstein and the Mummy and all those things from, you know, from before. So I mean, he's a cornerstone in the modern horror and stuff. As always, I like to look at some of the reviews and stuff, and it turns out that Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel both love this movie, whereas they hated Friday the 13th. But
and Phantasm
and Phantasm. Well, no,
that was rightly so.
Siskel, no. I remember Siskel gave Phantasm like a 70, but he gave Friday the 13th a 0.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, there you go.
0. He gave this an 88. And he says to see it with an audience, because it's how it's designed to get specific reactions from an audience at specific moments. And he says that, you know, it's a beautifully made thriller, more shocking than bloody, and it'll leave you screaming with regularity. And then Ebert says, Halloween is an absolute merciless thriller, a movie so violent and scary that yes, I would compare it to Psycho. So and he gave 100. So both
wow.
didn't like Friday the 13th, but boy, howdy, do they love this movie. So I don't understand them.
They were young. They were already jaded by the time Friday the 13th came out.
But 2 years later?
That's all it takes in the movie business.
3 years later, I guess. Let's do, whatever.
They were both in Chicago. Chicago burns you out real quick.
Sometimes. I would give it probably a 4 out of 5. It's good, but I do have it'll be probably another 15 years before I watch it again.
yeah. I would the thing that I liked about this film overall is the fact that without this film, we probably don't get a Jason. We probably don't get a Freddy.
No, absolutely, 100% agree.
And so this is we have this film to thank, and so
this would be the ultimate origin movie.
This would be the ultimate origin movie. Yeah,
that's how you close out 8-Bit Horror Fest. Yeah.
So,
the thing that I find funny is, Doug, you're saying about the reviews, and I was thinking about this when you guys were talking about the later films and even the reboot by Rob Zombie. This whole theme this year of origins and what we thought was scary back in the day, like my former self, when I was a teenager, was terrified of all these films. And this was true terror. And like the reviewer said, Ebert, he says that it was truly, I mean, just shocking and true terror. And like, now it's child's play. Like, you look at these movies and you're just like, okay, I mean, he stabbed a few people, but compared to what they do today in horror films,
Nothing. Like, even just like the Strangers, right? Like, like that one's kind of similar, where you've got like this group of people stalking people outside of their house and like killing people. And I think like three people die in that movie, but it's still like, fuck, that's terrifying.
It's tense, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like a modern day like version of it, almost, you know, with less backstory, I guess, but
yeah.
So I find it. Go ahead,
Peter. I would think one of the differences between this and The Strangers, though, is that, and I think it is an interesting point to make with this, except for Jamie Lee Curtis, nobody in this movie knows that they're being stalked, knows that they're being hunted.
Oh, yeah, and that's another good point. I was going to say, like, they said that when they made this movie, that they didn't mean to make a movie where like everyone who's having sex dies, like that kind of trope. John Carpenter, John Carpenter said that he was just like, the point was that when you're having sex, you're not paying attention to the fact that someone is about to murder
you're
you.
Vulnerable.
You're busy doing other things. They didn't mean to create the trope that like, hey, doing drugs and having sex gets you killed, but that's kind of what it became.
Mm-hmm. It is, but it was much more about just that you don't really notice anything else going on in the room at this moment.
Exactly. There's boobs and. See, like the guy in the movie theater, he saw boobs and he screamed out, "Boobs!" Someone could have been behind him about to slit his throat. You know, Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid was right there.
Ready to kill him right then.
So I really enjoyed the film. I think that my negative is lines up with Doug's. There were points in this film where I was putting my hands on my head on my hands, and I was like, well, I guess something's going to happen soon. Sure hope so.
I took a nap afterwards.
So I guess pacing doesn't hold up from 78 to, you know, 2017 as far as what we're used to nowadays. But with needing instant action and instant gratification, where in 78 and all those horror films, it was a slow burn and you had to wait for your kills and it built it up. So.
Yeah, back in my day, we had to wait.
To be fair, it's, you know, Star Wars 77, A New Hope, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that shit, that movie's fucking slow. Are you kidding me? Tell that movie in 45 fucking minutes.
For sure.
Like,
it's a slow movie.
Yeah.
Star Wars is a very slow movie when you watch it. Honestly, look at any of these major movies from the 70s. Look at Jaws. Look at Close Encounters. Look at the first Superman, and all of them are just kind of like, okay. Yeah.
Can I get just an abridged version, please?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we got a budget, and the big explosions and everything are going to have to wait for the last 10 minutes of the film, so let's build up this story.
Yeah, well, again, $300,000 doesn't get you a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's actually, I got to talk a couple of years back with Shane Black, the guy who did, like, Last Boy Scout and Iron Man 3. And he actually made a great point. And I think it is something that if we look back at these older movies, you can kind of see this, that it's a very modern thing, modern day, to have scenes in a movie that accomplish multiple things.
Mm-hmm.
That we will have this scene and it's going to tell something about your character and it's going to advance this element of the plot. Or it's going to tell something about her character and his backstory. And I think if you look at a lot of older movies like Halloween, like Closing Encounters, like Star Wars, like all of this, they were very much one scene, one idea.
Yeah.
That one of the reasons they seem so slow is that, you know, we do stop to see Donald Pleasance talk about, oh, he's pure evil, he's the devil, he's this and that. But whenever we do that, like, the plot is kind of coming to a dead stop.
Mm-hmm.
That now let's pause for a moment and Donald Pleasance is going to tell us some backstory. And, you know, as opposed to if you did a modern version of this, there would be like a secondary purpose behind this, that Donald Pleasance has chosen to tell his backstory at this moment that we've cut to him. So I think that is one of the reasons we look at a lot of these older movies and the pacing seems so much slower, is because we've gotten used to more sophisticated filmmaking.
That's fair.
That we can have scenes that operate on two or three levels.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite movies, I'm going to jump to something completely different now. You know the Kenneth Branagh movie Dead Again, the reincarnation movie?
I don't think I've seen that. Let me look it up.
Oh my God, are you guys serious? I'm not going to say a thing.
Yeah, we're all looking it up.
Nope, have not seen it.
The first thing that came to mind was Dead Alive.
Because it's going to give stuff away. Go see Dead, or rent, stream, however you have to get it. See Dead Again.
Okay.
Emma Thompson?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Derek Jacobi. It is freaking amazing, and I'll just tell you this. There's a moment in this movie when you're going to just shriek and nothing's happening.
Okay.
It is literally just two guys sitting at a table talking, and you're going to go, ah! Like, you're going to scream, because it is one of these beautiful moments of we are accomplishing multiple things in one scene.
Man, okay. What a cast, though. Look at this movie. Andy Garcia, Wayne Knight, Campbell Scott, Emma Thompson, Robin Williams, Patrick Doyle. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And this movie is friggin' amazing.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite movies for just... It has the biggest twist reveal I have ever seen in a movie.
Okay.
And you will scream when you see it.
I have added I have added it to my rent list. It is going to get watched.
Sweet. As soon as you add that to your Plex, let me know.
And now my whole point falls apart because I can't talk about it now.
Hey, you remember that? Never mind.
We'll have to have you back on just for a special episode, just to talk.
Everybody listening, we're going to come back in 2 weeks.
This is everyone's homework.
And I'm
going to
finish this point.
So ultimately, I give it a 4 out of 5 as well. I mean, it gets 4 points just for giving us what we have today. In the horror genre, so alone. But Kev, take us out, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of your guys' complaints about the movie I share. The biggest one is pacing, but after, you know, like what Peter said, it makes sense. It's just that was the way of filmmaking back in the day. The one thing I will – this is a love-hate thing. No, I wouldn't say hate, but if I could add one negative thing to the movie on top of what you guys have said was – the score, which is, and this is what I'm going to say.
No,
check this out. Here's how it goes, though. No. The negative thing I will say about the score is that it's mostly silent, except for maybe like 3 separate tracks, and they all kind of explain what's going on in the movie. But then my favorite part and the most iconic part is the score. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, most movies have like an ongoing soundtrack, and they have something going on in the background. The thing is, Halloween, it'll be very silent. Like, I was watching this movie at 4:30 this morning. I was coming home. Yeah. I was kind of drunk, and like, I was trying to like, I had to have the volume next to me because I didn't want to wake up my wife. And it was like the movie would just be fine and quiet, and then all of a sudden you'd hear out of nowhere, doo-doo-doo! And it's like I'd have to turn the volume down like real quick. Yeah. And so, like, it just, you know, like, it would just be dead silent, and then it would kick in. And like I said, I understand the reason, because it was building suspense, but the fact that it was literally only, like, 3 tracks, you heard, and each one of them, like, it was all kind of just like a shit's about to go down kind of track.
John Carpenter who did the music, too.
Yeah, yeah, John Carpenter, yeah, exactly. He does all his soundtracks.
Yeah, did you notice, actually, because I just rewatched it, this really struck me. Spoilers, iconic scene at the end that she's like stabbed in everything and he falls down and she's sitting here in the foreground crying and we see him sit up in the background behind her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, he's still alive. There's nothing musically there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That these days we would totally expect the like, whee!
Yeah.
Yeah. The very sharp like violin, like
the stinger or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing. There's no music, no sound, nothing. He just sits up and it's dead silent. Like you're saying that, you know, we literally skip over music for this bit. And I do think, again, like I said at the beginning of this, the people who took the wrong lessons away from this movie.
Yeah.
That I think it is 10 times more powerful, that moment when he sits up, because there's nothing else,
yeah.
that it is entirely dependent on the audience to react.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not telling you how to react. It is entirely on you to react to the fact of, holy crap, he's not dead.
Yeah.
So.
And a funny thing is, going back to sound effects, was the props to whoever thought they should throw in the Bionic Woman, like, wah-wah-wah-wah-wah, when he jumps over the, when he jumps on the roof of the car at the beginning of the movie.
Yes, at the beginning.
Yeah. I couldn't help but laugh at that. It, like, just, I forgot that happened. Just hearing that, I was just like, oh, God. But
that's
once
what
again,
happens when
the
people
70s.
Jump, right?
It's yeah, 70s. Exactly. Man,
well, Kev,
I was alive in the wrong time. I wanted to have that sound effect.
What are you going to rate it, Kev?
I'm giving it a 5 out of 5 just because it is a cornerstone in horror, and it raised the bar for a lot more movies out there. It's, and I love John Carpenter. To me, I mean, even, okay, Vampires, or what was that, Dracula 2000 or whatever? I don't think I can give, or what was that movie he did? There was a movie he did later, but like with John Carpenter doing The Thing, Halloween, Big Trouble in Little China, like he won my heart. So like I would love to meet the man one day. He's going on like a music tour. Like he's doing select dates where he's going to be performing like a bunch of songs from his movies.
Can I toss out, you might have caught this. Do you remember what movie they're watching when Jamie Lee Curtis is babysitting?
It looked like they were watching, what was it?
They're watching The Thing. They're watching the original version
the original
of The Thing.
Yeah, that was the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
With the,
I thought that was awesome. That I was sitting here, my girlfriend and I were watching it together, and I love the original version of it. I love the John Carpenter version, obviously, but I love the original. And when they're watching it on TV and they show like the RKO thing and the little all that, I'm like, holy crap, are they watching The Thing? Like, I don't think I've thought before that this is like sort of a super Easter egg in this movie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is going to close out 8-Bit Horror Fest for 2017.
Oh, shit. Woo! We did it again.
We want to thank Peter Kleins for being so gracious to hang out
with
us schlubs.
And end it.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for having me.
So.
Oh, thank you, man. Hey, where can we find you and all that? Yeah, go publicize, sir.
Find me. I'm the easiest person on the internet to find because I'm on Facebook, Peter Kleins, Twitter, Peter Kleins, Instagram, Peter Kleins. Like we've talked about before, I'm actually talking about this right now on Twitter. If you hear this and, well, okay, when this actually airs, but if you jump back in time, 2 days.
I thought we were going. I thought we were putting it up on Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have it. Well, because our normal show will go up on Halloween, so I figured this one would go up the day before.
Oh, okay. There you go. Devil's Night, if you will.
Yeah.
So, Devil's Night. Everyone look back 24 hours, and you'll see me talking about this show right then and there.
There you go.
You know, and of course you have your new book that's out, Paradox Bound, and I've following your Twitter. It's been blowing up lately in unexpected ways, right?
It has. It's actually been really. Part of it is that, well, we don't need to go into too much, but like, there's a bunch of Facebook issues going on. But yeah, Twitter is jumping up, and Paradox Bound is doing great. So I'm really happy with that.
Awesome.
If you happen to be one of the few people in America who hasn't read it, please pick it up. So you'll know what everyone else is talking about when we talk about faceless, weird faceless killers. And
it was fantastic. I finished it right after our interview, and it was funny. I loved it. And my coworker, the one who was a big fan, who had the, like, you know, paragraphs of questions for you, with all the spoilers, like, we both like fanboyed out on that, like, that Monday afterwards. We're just like, oh, do you remember this part? What do you think about this? You know, it was pretty amazing. So it was a great book. So I highly recommend anyone to just pick it up, man. It was fantastic.
We'd also recommend, I wish we were sponsored by fucking Audible so we could get some money for saying this stuff, but pick up on Audible.
Audible. We'll all say it a couple times, and then we'll tag them in when we mention it.
The narrator that has narrated your books, I forget his
Ray
name
Porter.
Off the top of my head.
Ray Porter,
Yes.
Ray Porter.
Is the greatest. So it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, Ray's done my three, not quite standalone novels, but he did The Fold, he did 14, he did Paradox Bound, he did most of a short story collection that came out this summer, Dead Man Can't Complain. Mm-hmm. He even did, there's an anthology that I was in, Kaiju Rising, which was all giant monster stories. And Ray actually narrated my story that was in that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Ray's awesome.
Man, I'd love to have, we got to get him on the show sometime. Get that party
totally
going.
He's fantastic. He's a great guy. He's, if you're Lost fans, he's in Lost. I don't know if I've told you that before.
What? No.
What?
Dead serious. Okay. Were you Lost fans? 10%?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Did you see the final thing they did? The like little 20-minute like sort of bonus episode of Ben Linus going around and like shutting down everything?
Yes.
And shutting down the warehouse and shutting down, like going to pick up Will at the insane asylum and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Porter is one of the guys at the warehouse. The two guys are at the warehouse, like painting labels on everything and doing it. One of those is Ray Porter.
Wow. I'm looking at his acting credits right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was on The Mentalist and Shameless, and he was in Argo.
Yep. Ray has done a ton of stuff.
That's awesome.
I seriously think one of the luckiest things that ever happened in my career, like I can pick like a couple key things, like I sold my first novel, I got an agent, all this. Audible pairing me up with Ray Porter is one of the best things that has happened to me as a writer.
Guys, because he was in Bioshock 2.
I love Bioshock 2.
Is the voice of Mark Meltzer.
I don't know who that was.
I don't remember. I don't remember
it's
either.
It's been like 10 years since I played Bioshock 2.
Exactly. So.
But Lost, I remember that. That was like a webisode that showed up after it. And
yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, man, it was fantastic. I loved that show.
There were two guys at the warehouse. There was like a tall, skinny guy. Mm-hmm. And there was a shorter guy with like really long hair and a beard that went everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the short guy is Ray Porter.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to dig that up right now on YouTube and listen to him bitch about getting pallets ready to drop off at the islands. that's right. That is the guy who reads all my books for me and everything. And he is fantastic. Yeah, I am lucky enough to actually know him because he lives here in LA. So we have gotten to hang out a couple times and everything. Oh, and
cool. It's also an almost and famous.
And when we shut off the recording, I can tell you a fun Paradox Bound Easter egg.
Okay, yes. Cool.
Well, we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Is it the one about the car? Was that him?
Oh, that's right. Did we talk about this before?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it last one. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, but if you haven't heard that Easter egg yet, go listen to our interview with Peter Kleins. It was the very first thing we posted this month for Rapid Horror Fest. So
yes.
Hear about it there.
That's right.
At the beginning, and it's awesome. Go listen to it right now.
Stop what you're doing. Stop this recording at this very point.
We need to stop this recording. We've been going on for almost 2 hours. Time to shut the fuck up, guys.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We want to thank everybody for tuning in for 8-Bit Horror Fest. Tune in next year where we'll be back and we'll
do something.
We'll figure it out.
We need to like hold like a voting thing. Like, hey, what the fuck should we watch next year?
That'd be good.
God, being chosen by the fans.
That's right. That's the worst. That's always the worst way to do it. Let's do it.
I was gonna say we're gonna get trolled and have to watch like the worst horror movies.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Okay.
No, don't do it because they're all gonna rally behind Kevin. We're gonna have to watch the Phantasm trilogy, quadruple, whatever.
There was five Phantasms. Well, okay.
I'm gonna push for Resident Evil. I'm just telling you now.
Okay.
Hey, I love that one.
We could do video game horror movies. There's enough of those out there.
Yeah.
Like we got Silent Hill,
we could
Hill,
do
Resident
Tomb
Evil.
Raider. We could do Mario Brothers. All horror films.
Not horrible.
All right. We're getting out of here. Thank you, Peter Kleins, again. Until next year.